much different place. There was an awful lot of, I don't know, you would call them clones at this time. You would see big handlebar moustaches and check shirts and very tight bleached jeans. It's exactly how people would probably like to remember how the gay scene was. Did I remember that Clone Zone used to have a trestle table selling their wares inside as well? My visits were kind of sporadic from there on, but at the time, the gay scene was almost entirely in Earl's Court, whereas I believe beforehand it had been centred on Kensington High Street, places like the Sombrero and other places where you could dance but not touch, and they weren't licensed, so they really were tea dances in the proper sense of the word. Yes, so there was a couple of places in Earl's Court, including the infamous Coldhern, which really does deserve its reputation. How they got away with it in the late 70s with kind of gay being an underground thing, I don't know. Then the scene kind of, next time I came round, which would be the early to mid 80s, when I was staying in a squat in Covent Garden, it had kind of moved again to North London. I mean, it was mainly centred around Camden, who had at the time the only gay shop in London, top end of Camden High Street. I can't remember what used
It
it
was up
was
by the canal. Up by the
originally
canal.
called, but quickly became the Zipper Store, which in itself was the proper type of sex shop, as in it had pegboard walls and magazines in bags held up by curtain wire, so that they all kind of would limply hang over and sporadically just throw themselves onto the floor. And it was, there was so much, seemed to be so much more going on. You looked in the back of things like Time Out, and there were literally dozens and dozens and dozens of pubs and drag clubs for you to choose from all the way around London, especially in, lots in North London, lots in South London. Camberwell, I think there were three gay pubs all at once here. There was the Union on the Camberwell Road that used to have drag acts performing on the bar. There was another one a bit further up, which is now a trendy pub.
Not the Skinner's Arms.
No, I can't remember what it was. It had completely blacked out windows, and the last time I went, which would have been early 90s, they were still a DJ that was playing records and talking between them, and then when he got bored, you'd hear the needle kind of scratch off, which of course wasn't as bad as oh, it's the Fort in Borough, which was possibly one of the most disgustingly dirty places I've ever been in. Not dirty in the traditional sense, but the fact that your feet would stick to the floor as you walked in, and you looked at the lovely brass bar fittings that hadn't been cleaned for years. So you wouldn't ever buy anything that wasn't in a bottle already. And the music was on a tape deck and would come suddenly to the end until the barman went over and turned it over. Oh, those were the days. But as I say, there were lots and lots of pubs and clubs lots of drag, which at the time was an awful lot of miming, and not so much quick comedy, which kind of came on a lot later on. Where else? There was the Vauxhall Tavern, of course, but not too far away was the even more notorious Market Tavern, which I believe was the first pub I went in on my own. Up the sides, it was part of a kind of this late 60s
Market
housing.
Towers, I think the building.
Yeah, and you had to go. The entrance was up the stairway at the side, and I went in, and I would have been around 16 at the time, and I was the youngest person there by a good 40 years. I probably looked like a rabbit caught in the headlights, and it was a sea of mule caps and big mustaches. It was exciting and terrifying at the same time, as most people were at that time that didn't live in the big city. You really did believe that you were the only gay in the village, and that was quite possibly true.
Do you recall a particular experience of a place being raided while you were there?
Vauxhall Tavern, yes, and being lined up against the wall, and everybody trying to slip out the side and the back exit before you'd be frisked, and they take your name and address. It was more of a threat rather than anything coming of it, but it was very much a deterrent to people at the time, and they really didn't seem to be any particular reason for them to be raiding places. At the time, I think there was a lot of homophobic police who were just out to make people's life as difficult as possible. We did the saunas, and we've done the pubs and the clubs. What else? I think when kind of the gay epicenter moved to Soho, it started coming to the surface a lot more. Although AIDS arrived here in about 82, nobody really knew about it, and even when Terry Higgins died in July 84, I mean, even still at that time they weren't writing HIV or AIDS on the death certificates. But that's when people, even then, it took a good couple of years for people to start taking any serious notice of it. 88, you'd still get little skinny queens in crop tops wandering up and down Old Compton Street, and they'd shout to each other there. So they'd say hello, they'd just go, "Got AIDS yet?" Mm-hmm. And it all seemed to be, because it seemed very unreal, because nobody knew what it was, why it was, or how they were going to deal with it. I think natural instinct was just to make a big joke out of it, until we got to about 1990, I suppose. 1989-90, where it just seemed to be that all you ever did was go to funerals, people were literally dropping like flies and dying in front of you. An awful lot of people committed suicide because of the shame, the amount of pain they were in, how they looked. They didn't want their families to find out. It was a horrendous time. And in the hospitals were just not coping with it. They were, the nurses and doctors seemed afraid to deal with the patients. They were put into general wards, and you'd find that there'd be somebody else in the ward with, you know, flu or a bad cold, and you just thought, well, it's going to finish him off. And generally it did, and they just, you know, put on the death certificate, pneumonia, and that would be another one. But I think it was probably the end of the gay community as it used to be, just because it was decimated. It really, really was. Because again, nobody knew how it was being transmitted. Nobody was talking about safe sex or protecting yourself. I remember it at one point, it was all blamed on poppers. There was a direct correlation between poppers and Kaposi's syndrome. I don't know who was making all this rubbish up, but it was terrifying. And for the ones left behind, there was such a high proportion that felt guilty that they weren't infected, because if you've got, you know, all your friends at that time, it was a death sentence. And you think, well, I've done the same things, possibly with the same people, and I haven't, and I'm not ill. Quite a few people I know were going to the doctors month after month for test after test, and they were still negative, and they were just, I don't know how I managed this. And it's so much different these days, that with it not being a death sentence anymore, that people don't treat it with the same caution, even though really it does still carry the same kind of stigma. And then of course things like the tombstone adverts on TV really didn't help.
Don't die of ignorance, John.